Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about the holiday of Purim. And what can we learn from it about what's concealed, what's revealed? Be with us. It's going to be really interesting. Tal, please. Yeah, it's really interesting that all throughout the holiday there's this repeating motive of concealment. There are the costumes, there's the mask. Esther in the story hides her identity from the Ahasuerus, that she's Jewish. And it's something really relevant to our life, what's hidden from us, what's revealed to us. Many times we feel that we see only a small portion of reality. Many times we're focused on very narrow matters that concern us, and we're missing out on the big picture. So this is what we'd like to talk about today, and we'd like to ask, where does this custom of wearing masks on Purim come from? The thing is, Queen Esther, Malkat Esther in Hebrew, that comes from the word Malchut, kingdom. And this Malchut is actually a mechanism that controls all of reality. And this Malchut, kingdom, is called Esther from the word Hastara, concealment. And really in our world, we see that everything's in concealment. We don't know how are we controlled. We don't know that in nature there's a certain mechanism, program, that controls us. We aren't aware of it. We act like we're in a field that's controlled by some upper force that spreads out into many forces and a very big network that controls the entire world, all of reality, what only now we're starting to gradually discover in science, that everything's interconnected, interrelated, that the world's round, namely integral, and that there is a global connection between all the parts and areas and everything there is in the world. And we see only a very small portion of reality. It's not that we're talking about some gray or black or white energy or something, but these are things that we're not revealing at all, that we don't know about at all. And there's not even a hint that there's something that's hidden here. But we're really in a place, in a world, where everything in our life is concealed. And if on the degrees of the still, the vegetative, and the animate, for them it's enough, they live their life, they have no questions. Why? Because they act by instinct, meaning that nature controls them by rules, by forces, and that's how they're controlled, for better or for worse. It's not important. They have no better or worse. But life is life, and you live as long as you live. Man, as it says, he's involved in everything. That he doesn't exactly know where is he, what does he exist for. He has this question that animals don't have, that's beyond the animate degree in him, where he's asking, what do I need it for? It's a question that doesn't come from the animate degree in us, but from within us, from our consciousness. What is it all for? And then, when a person starts relating to reality this way, he feels himself very limited. He feels that he doesn't know where he is, and why, and what for, and life is hard, and he doesn't know what to do about himself, and with this world that he was suddenly born into, and what's going on. And according to our animate corporeal part, then, yeah, we live our life, we bear children. But when this question suddenly awakens in us, what is it all for? In spirit, we're much worse off than animals. And in this, we're really miserable. And here we feel that there's a certain concealment, that really this system that controls us, it's the malchut, from the word limloch, to rule, and it controls us in concealment. Really, the great big Queen Esther. It's not the image of some woman or young lady that's Jewish or not, but it's really the malchut that controls us, and controls us in such a way where we don't understand where we're headed, what are we doing, what do we do about all of this. And such occurrences like Purim come to us many times throughout history in our development. It comes to us in order for us to awaken, to do our role. Meaning, not to simply live our entire life like all other nations, in a simple corporeal manner, like all the nations in the 127 countries that are mentioned in the Esther scroll, Megillat Esther in Hebrew. But we have to understand that we have to reveal the concealment, to reveal Esther, to bring this concealment to revelation. And this is upon us to do. And all the nations around us, or more correctly put, that we exist in, all of these nations exist in order to awaken us toward that. And in those countries, their leaders, some of which are especially evil. Why evil? Because you can't awaken the nation or their desire through good, especially the egoistic desire that exists in the people of Israel, because they're a very stubborn people. And it's very hard to awaken them to think about their life, their spiritual life. But what's interesting is that they are very inclined to forget about everything and really bury themselves in corporeality. And we see it in modern times too, in our time. If there's an opportunity in the United States, in some place, to become part of the market, so to speak, to get into politics, money, something, you have Jews there. Wherever you have money, you have Jews. Sometimes they're in science, sometimes in culture, music and so on, but really, especially, it's money. However you turn it, in the corporeal life, and in order to awaken us, comes Ahasuerus, and also Aman, his helper, and they can already start cooking things in a way that they don't know what's going on, because above the Ahasuerus, there is another king that's completely concealed, and he determines everything. And he has to bring all of mankind to reveal him, to attain him. And this is possible to do only through the Jews, because in them there's this secret, there's this spiritual gene that can do it. And then there's a certain connection that happens between Ahasuerus and Haman, that both of them begin to awaken these things. Ahasuerus is the evil part in reality, but not that evil. It's the evil force that's against the good force. But Haman, that's really the big klipa, the big shell, that all the time wants to destroy the people of Israel, that bear the method for the correction of the world in them. And this is what happens. And everyone acts out of concealment. Both the Ahasuerus and also Aman They're not really revealing what do they want, what do or don't they want, until comes a special time where there's an opportunity, and then Haman starts awakening the Ahasuerus, giving his proclamation in all the countries in the entire Persian Empire of back then, that all the 127 countries have to go against the Jews and kill them, all those Jews that were dispersed among them. This speaks of the forces of nature that are vis-a-vis the upper force. The scroll writes about the king and about the Ahasuerus. So, if it doesn't talk about the Ahasuerus, then it's about the Creator, the Upper Force. And if it's about the Ahasuerus, then it's about him. It's the lower king. And if it talks about Haman, then it talks about the Klipa, the shell, which is really against the people of Israel. And there's another very small, almost hidden force called Mordechai, that is very concerned about how to save the people of Israel, but he lacks the strength, the force to do it. It's the force of bestowal, the foundation, the basis of the people of Israel, but it can't act, because the force of bestowal, it has nothing. It's just good. He sits there on the stone at the entrance to the king's palace, and even though that he's sorry about everything that's going on and he understands it, but it's like Kabbalists in our times, truly so. What do you mean by the force of bestowal? It means that he knows that the future of the world is bestowal and love. It's the good and nice connection between all parts of reality, between all people. But no one will listen to him. No one will talk to him. He doesn't interest anyone. If he sits quietly, then he's allowed to sit. If he gets up, then like we feel it on ourselves, then immediately there are different enemies and haters that go against us, that want to contradict us. And it's well known. And it's not only so with us, but this is how it was with Kabbalists all throughout the generations. But what can you do? It's the call of the hour. And like Bala Sulam writes in The Last Generation, how can we sit quietly if you have the ability to save the nation and the world? And therefore Mordechai, even though that he's sitting, but once he has an opportunity, he acts. But he acts in concealment through Queen Esther. Esther, from the word hastara, concealment. She's a relative of his. He's her uncle. Let's put it that way, to keep things simple. Because he belongs to the degree of Bina, Gar of Bina, and Queen Esther, she is from the Zat of Bina that's related to the Malchut. These words you just said, what do they mean? That in the upper mechanism that controls all of reality, we have forces that act in nature, where the uppermost force is the Creator, that's the King that it speaks of, not the Ahasuerus, but the King. And under him, there are forces, the positive and the negative forces, that act in reality. The force of Bina, which is the force of correction, but that still can't correct mankind. This is Mordechai. Next, there is the force of Bina that is already related to reality, but in a hidden way, which is Esther. It's the part of the Malchut that's connected to or related with the Malchut, or the Bina that's connected to the Malchut. And she's connected to the Malchut because she is the wife of the Ahasuerus. And he's a part of the entire desire, the Malchut. Haman, he's a part of the Klipa. He is that part of the will to receive that the Jews can't correct. But the only way that it's possible to correct it is by killing it. By killing him and his 10 sons, meaning this entire partsuf, this entire evil mechanism that you can't correct, which is against crowning the upper force, that is the desire to bestow, to love, love another as thyself, then he's against that. He can't agree with it. It's the complete opposite of him. And we have to kill these kinds of inclinations inside of us, also inside of us, of course, in each and every one of us. And this is actually the Megillah, the scroll. The scroll, it explains about how when the time comes and Haman awakens and begins to awaken the Ahasuerus, and the Ahasuerus, after that, comes to a point where he gives an order to all of the 127 countries in his kingdom, and everyone's ready to get up and carry out the king's order. But it's not exactly clear what does the king want. It's not said directly in the king's declaration, but in the so-called Pachegen Haktav, which is an additional explanation to the words of the king, that from there only is it known, understood, that it's necessary to go against Haman instead of going against the Jews and to kill him. And there is an additional story here with the Haman that wanted to be instead of the king because he gives an order and the king as if carries out his order. So there's the matter that Haman, he as if attacks Esther, goes against her, and the king sees that this way he acquires Esther, he's in control over her. And the Ahasuerus, he sees that this way he's losing his kingdom, that Haman wants to take control of his kingdom by doing what he does against Esther, against the Malchut, the kingdom that's in Hester, in concealment, and then the Malchut comes out of concealment and says that it's the Ahasuerus that caused all the problems. Aman. I get the names confused when I talk, so make sure that I get it right. That Aman caused all of Ahasuerus's problems, and then the Ahasuerus understands that Aman is the problem, and he asks, how to respect that person that the king wants to benefit so much? And then it's revealed that Haman wants to rule. And then the king says, if so, then we will take Mordechai. Why Mordechai? Because Haman says that, first of all, it's necessary to kill Mordechai. And then the king says that it should then be the exact opposite, that Mordechai will sit on the horse and that Haman will walk the horse. And later it becomes revealed that Haman already prepared all of his weapons in order to kill all the Jews, in order to hang Mordechai, and this way to finish off the entire kingdom of Ahasuerus and to come to power himself, meaning that this evil inclination, this great klipa, shell, it can't merge in any way with the other forces, but it can only be 100% in power. And therefore, it's revealed both in different religions, beliefs, and different forms of control in our world, and those people that say that we are the ones that have to rule, that only our religion should rule the entire world. And so what follows is that the king, he gives an order, and
to
Haman is hung on that great big tree that he prepared in order to hang Mordechai, and the 10 sons of Haman are being killed, and then the city of Shushan celebrated, and everyone was happy, and this is how we reach a state where there's no more evil in the world, because we have destroyed, killed, and canceled it. This is what the scroll of Esther is about, that it talks about a state where humanity discovers all the evil in the world, reveals all of the evil in the world, and from this revelation it understands what it has to do, that it's necessary to completely eradicate the human ego, the will to receive, in order to receive, and this way to reach a state where it is entirely good, and through that to the end of correction, where there is no further evil in the world. And in name of that, we have a feast and celebration, and we have to reach a state of ad deloyada, meaning that a person has to drink so much and be happy and gladden others to a point where there is no difference between Haman and Mordechai, because there is no more Haman in the world. And one can allow himself to become so intoxicated that he has no further discernments. I have a question. The main scene in this story is that we eradicate the evil from the world, and there's no more evil in the world, and that's the perfect and good state. That's called the end of correction in the wisdom of Kabbalah. You started your explanation from a different point, that in Purim, that this holiday symbolizes concealment and masks and so on. You started with saying that there is a mechanism that controls all of reality and that it's hidden from us. How does the wisdom of Kabbalah define that evil that as if has to be eradicated from the world? What is that evil, and how is it related to the revelation of that hidden mechanism that's probably also controlling us now? Sure it is. So what is that evil, and why, when we eradicate it, can we discover that mechanism that controls everything? First of all, this evil exists in everyone. In each and every person, there is a part of Haman. And it also exists in all of nature, in the still, in the vegetative, in the animate. It also exists in the inclination of the nations of the world, of all nations, toward that evil, that they want to control others. The desire to control others, that's the evil? Yes. That is especially the evil in its revelation. We see that there are entire nations and religions that want to control others. If the essence of the evil is the desire to control others, and this desire exists in every person, then what's the relation between eradicating these very egoistic inclinations and a person's ability to discover the hidden mechanism that operates reality? If we will be able to come out of the evil, to move away from it, then by that we can come closer to the revelation of the good. Is the good related to the hidden mechanism that controls everything? Yes. Without the bad, you can't reveal the good. Without the bad, you can't come closer to the good. What's unique about the bad, that it exists and it's concealed in order for us to be needy of the good, because without the bad, we wouldn't have been directed correctly at the good. And regarding that system that controls all of reality, why don't I feel it now? Why is it hidden? Because you, and pardon me for saying so, are in discernments that are the very opposite of that hidden mechanism. Opposite how? That this entire hidden mechanism, it works by the force of bestowal, love, connection, mutuality. And an ordinary person in our world acts out of the force of reception, by his ego, by benefiting himself, even if it's at the expense of others. In the story, the scroll itself starts revealing that hidden system, because it sounds like you're talking about different forces that are acting in us. Does it start explaining about the forces themselves? Again, please. The story about Aman and the Chashverosh and everything, is this actually the system that's hidden from us, those forces that you're talking about? Of course. Meaning that the stories themselves, they start revealing to us some of what is hidden in reality. Of course, if we read the scroll correctly, then this is what we see. But no one reads it correctly. Everyone thinks that it's a good story for children. After we finish kindergarten, we forget about the Esther scroll. We remember that once there used to be something like that in childhood, but that's it. We don't understand that it's something eternal that brings us to the end of correction, to the most exalted state that will once happen to the people of Israel and all of mankind. Dr. Lightman, our time's almost up. We started our show with a question of, why do we put on masks? So beyond the story of the holiday and the masks and everything, what's the most important insight that we should take from this show about the Esther scroll? To find the evil, both in every person, in every country, in the world, and how exactly does this evil act? And how can we, in a smart way, like Mordechai and Esther and the Achashverosh acted against Aman, that they brought him to a point where the evil force disappears from the world? This is what we have to learn from the Esther scroll, and let's hope that we'll realize it. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.